It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, back to back to back. Brad's back again. Hello, Brad.
Yeah, like you're not traveling around the world.
Well, I'm fixing to, which is back to back to back.
But we're here. This is cool.
This is cool. We get a chance to do it. And then I'll be off shortly to...
Where you're going like San Francisco and then like Europe, aren't you?
Yeah, just San Francisco, a one-day bridge builder event on Thursday, which is...
Europe's not a one day?
It's the day after tomorrow. No, Europe is not one day. The bad thing about the San Francisco thing is it happens to fall on my 37th wedding anniversary, so Sarah and I will have to celebrate around that day, but we...
How do you schedule that?
It was a bridge builder event. It's the only day this county office of ed could hold this workshop, and... Sarah and I are great about that. Sarah's not date fixated. I'm not either. If we're, you know, we'll go out to dinner. We'll have a good time. But we're actually, she's going to Europe with me for a big slice of the time.
And oh, there you go.
We're going to have a few days in Paris together. So
there you go. Well, that's a good trade.
That will make up
for it. That was a good trade. I think that'll make up for it.
It's Sarah's favorite city, which drives me insane. I'd rather
Paris?
Yeah. I'm not a big city guy. I'd rather be out in the woods somewhere.
Paris is like an outdoor toilet.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I mean, I'm
have
sorry.
You been there?
Yes, I have.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah, no, I have many a Paris, and that's why I
that's
comment.
Quite a shot.
Well, it's, my it's wife pretty, it's pretty, yeah. But watch where you step.
Okay. Now, I experienced that in India a bit, but I know
oh, yeah, that goes to a whole different level, India.
I would not have tied that into, but anyway, Sarah and I have had 37 lovely years together.
Well, don't let that stop you.
No, don't worry. Don't worry. That's not
And
my.
For all our Parisians that felt offended with it, it's just an observation. I don't understand.
And the email address again for Brad?
Is something something at something.
You are still doing email bankruptcy, I noticed.
Regularly.
Now, even with me.
I'm sorry.
No, I can't even get an email back from you. Wow. How have we gotten there?
Just rather consumed with multiple projects trying to keep my nose to the grindstone. But
well, I'm about to clear it myself. I tell you, it's just.
Are you?
I've still managed to answer every email I've ever gotten. But
what?
Yeah, it's thousands and thousands and thousands. But now, I mean, I'm getting.
Can I shake your hand? That is impressive.
I don't know that that's. You're welcome.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I just I've got some things going on now at home that are taking much more of my time and. Traveling on the road, much less able to get to, particularly the 4 or 5 page emails where people describing to me some very intricate need they've got, which, you know, they all break my heart. It's just hard to read people stuck in places where they're stuck. And then at the end, it's, what would you tell me to do? Well, I don't, you know, without sitting down.
Lean on Jesus.
Yeah, well, I do give them that. But,
no, but I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges is I know we're meant to love and help, but I think at the end of the day, I even found this a lot in pastoring. It is so much more life-giving for me to teach people how to really find the Lord in the midst of their stuff.
Absolutely.
He's a very present help. But what they're used to is finding someone with an answer.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not wrong. It's just, it's like, you know, giving someone a fish or teaching them to fish. It's, you know...
And it is easier to give an answer than to help someone discover Jesus in the midst of that moment. I mean, it is easier just to say,
yeah.
Well, here's the three things you can do, but they don't work. The problem is in the long run, you've given them three things to do that don't work, and they do them, and they just
They work with Jesus. It's always the with Jesus thing.
Yeah, that part works.
That part works.
Yeah.
Life with him works. Life without him, not so good.
But if you don't have a connection to that, I thought about that a little bit when I was in Russia. There were times when I was with the Russian folks where because it's a big conference and people all knew each other well. It's kind of like a family reunion thing. And so people would get talking around me in Russian, everybody, and no one's even think to translating for me. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is must be what it feels like when people hear about a great journey with God and it hasn't become real yet for them. They just got to feel kind of lost in the room. I can see the smiles. I realize other people, there's wonderful things going on here. At one point, I'm totally lost in what's going on in the room. And then people start praying around me and I'm sitting there going, I haven't a clue what's going on. No one's whispered in my ear what. Then they've done great most of that to do that. And all of a sudden some guy comes over who does speak English and say, would you like to pray with our group? I said, are we praying in groups? Yeah. Great. I'd be happy to join you. Yeah. But I can't imagine people who, and I get that email a lot, people who haven't connected yet with something real. And so they're hoping, they're trying, they're doing a lot of, and I think they haven't surrendered enough of what I've got to do to get there, to let God get there and invite them into that space. But it's got to be, and I do, I mean, I know it is. I know it's incredibly frustrating. It's incredibly...
Well, I think the whole lost in translation, and I think what the most awful thing is to be in this religious environment where everyone's speaking a different language, and you're left to smile and nod as if, of course, I know what's going on. I don't want to act like I'm stupid, so we play along. And it's like that is the one religious impulse that must be resisted, is to just play along.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think the more that's the response, I think the more lost you kind of get. It's because then it's a sense of, well, if everyone else thinks I'm fine, then I must be fine. And I just, I don't know. I think that's the biggest shell to crack, is people's capacity to just all of a sudden, wait a minute, I'm not fine.
Yeah.
And
this doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
And that's a big risk, because I think everybody who feels that feels like I'm the stupid idiot, the only one not getting it. And if I say that, then people will know that I'm the stupid idiot and doesn't get it.
But
where honesty helps breed the transformation that's so important for me.
I think that is the most glorious first step of reality, because it's like spiritual stuff is not about smarts.
Yeah.
I mean, it really isn't. I mean, I'd love to think it was, especially if you get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, but it's not about smarts. It is about honesty.
Yeah.
And I think the more honest someone is able to be, as uncomfortable as that is, that is one of the most broad open doorways to real relationship with God, because I find most people are hiding.
And most people are hiding from themselves. I mean, the reality is they're not intentionally hiding so much as – they're so shut down within themselves that they don't even know what's on us there. And I found this over, Sarah, the course of our marriage. You know, I have found that every moment when Sarah and I have gotten more honest with the other, just gone to a deeper level of letting the other one see inside our hearts, especially the broken areas, especially the areas you'd really want to hide, honesty doesn't make people less endearing. In fact, it's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
The more I see into Sarah's heart, even places she might have got hurt as a young kid or whatever, I'm not like, oh, what's stupid fool? I'm just, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. I mean, it's so endearing to be inside someone's pain with them that it's not, but everybody thinks it's a problem. So I've got to keep covering up. And yeah,
what is the impulse that makes us do that? Because it is the exact opposite. When someone is not pretending to have it all together, but seems to be honest with the fact that there's some things that just don't fit and there's some things that just don't work, I usually find those people to be a breath of fresh air to be around. You sort of feel like, oh, you're one of those. I don't have to perform. I don't have to pretend. I can just be.
Yeah.
Why do we not recognize that's the preferred way to live life? Is that the whole shame thing?
It could be. It could be related to that. I think we get so used to, maybe even at a very young age, if you get honest with the wrong people, they kill you. They'll just eat you for lunch.
And truth in packaging laws, that is true.
That is almost, yeah.
I cannot sit here and say, well, that won't happen. It's like, no, I can pretty much guarantee. But even that, even those worst fear moments, when it's with Jesus, man, there's a depth of fellowship that comes out of life when it's with Jesus. It's awful when it's felt without him. I mean, I think that's that. I think abandonment is one of the biggest deals inside us that keeps us shut down. The yep. fear of that.
Yep.
You know, it's not good for man to be alone. It's not good for me to feel alone.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy that at all.
And more other people have exploited you and taken advantage of you and used you, then I think people really do get used to, I'm going to crawl inside this little shell here.
Protective.
Yeah. And I think some of it is coping mechanisms that are probably really, really good when you're in an abusive situation. But when you get beyond that abusive situation,
they become a prison.
Oh, they become, yeah. And so how does God, and I think that's part of the whole, the truth will set you free. I think it's all part of God's love invites us into a place of increasing honesty. And I think even the whole religious hang-up about God has often been, no, you can't be with God until you've done your little repentance, confession, prayer, and got all cleansed, and now you go be with God, and God doesn't see any of your bad stuff. And so even that was a little bit of a still hiding behind the shell of my own failure when I'm with God. I don't let God in there because God's going to be really ticked off, or he's got to run away if he realizes I'm still struggling with ugly stuff in my life. Instead of the incarnation being, no, I want to be in your ugly stuff with you. I want to be there. I want you to know that I can love you out of here. That's the whole purpose of the incarnation to me. But religion has always made God scary until you're perfect. And so even their whole justification thing is Jesus makes you perfect so God can stand you. And it really... Don't you think?
No, I do, but I do think that is just Dane Bramaged, because it's like...
Dane Bramaged?
Yes. That's just Dane Bramaged.
What is Dane Bramaged?
That's brain damage backwards. In the whole bit, because the whole idea that God can't look upon sin, it's like, well, then guess what? God can't look upon just about everything.
Yep.
And it's like, what comfort is that? And what power is there to transform if that's more powerful than his capacity to look upon it?
Yeah, and what did the incarnation prove if it didn't prove God could be with us at our most broken, sinful, whatever, and be the rescuer in the story? I mean, the incarnation is God came here. Not that we were good enough to crawl up there on his holy throne and finally tolerate us, but that he could come live among us and party with us and find us in the depths of our brokenness and invite us to a place of liberty and life.
You know, I never, ever, in all of my church going, I never, ever heard this message. Now, maybe it was the day I was sick or something like that.
You might have missed it.
Yeah, I might have missed it.
I hear you.
But I
had perfect Sunday school attendance, so
yeah,
I might have missed it.
So you probably didn't. I remember when writing A Man Like No Other, and all of a sudden I stumbled across that verse where the angels are declaring that with men, God is pleased. And I sat there going like, what?
Which is right after...
When did that happen?
Yeah, which is right after on earth, peace, goodwill toward men. We always quote that.
Yeah, and it's like, but we don't camp around what I thought was one of the most exquisite little finds of going like, no, where did I miss that? I don't remember that in the Christmas story. I don't remember that in all the sermons. I don't remember that being the thing that the shepherds were left with. You end up going like, wait a minute. Someone stop. Hold on. Can you say that again, God, from all of heaven, that actually with men you're pleased? Because we don't know that. That's where religion gets spawned. It's in the absence of knowing that, that we do 1,000 ridiculous religious evils that take us far afield. And I'm going like, if we understood that, you know what? God is absolutely in love with us. He is absolutely overwhelmed. Just as we are. That does not excuse our behavior. That doesn't say, oh, holy, awesome, everything that you do is great. But it's, you know what? I want to be in relationship.
Yeah, can he be well pleased with us and know we're lost at the same time?
Yes.
And religion can't hold that intention. And I think it's absolutely true. Yeah, I'm well pleased with humanity, but I know humanity is lost. I know sin rules the day. I know the prince of the power of this air determines a lot of credit. And then we blame God for stuff the enemy does in the world.
See, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where my wiring got changed, but I get absolutely confused with this need to express hatred towards people and what's wrong when it's the kindness of God that leads to repentance. I just ended up going like, you know what? I get that. How do you change their behavior? Oh, gotta give a mean face at that. Gotta make sure that someone knows that's wrong. And it's like, okay, I get that. But guess what? That's not going to be the empowering part of change.
Yeah.
You're scaring the living daylights out of that person. So they might go, oops, for a moment. But that doesn't empower them to live different.
No.
They're still scared.
And I think the greatest lie of religion is God's not worth loving for himself. So if we make God too good, gracious, kind, and loving.
See, you're giving them permission.
Then you're just going to run off and sin like a lousy dog because you won't care. No. And I now look back at that going, I know when I used to believe that. I used to think that was true. But now I know you can't know this Father. You can't be inside his love and not want to be like him. It doesn't make you calloused about your sin. It doesn't make you excuse the damage you do to people. The damage you do to people actually causes pain in your heart. But it's not the distant from God, God hates me pain. It's the pain of I want to be like you are in the world. Would you change me? That knowing him is to be want to be like him.
Yeah.
And the lie is that we wouldn't. The lie is no. Unless God's mean, demanding, stern, and going to kick your tail if you don't get it right, you won't change. You won't be different.
Or I got to make sure that you're aware of all the potential doom and gloom of judgment for that bad behavior of yours. And just going like, okay, you know what? God is holy. God is just. God. I mean, there's justice. I get all that. But you know what makes me change? Is when I recognize that he is so powerful that my being messed up and doing it wrong does not prevent him from seeing something of worth and value in me. That's when I all of a sudden like, well, whatever that fascination was with that sin thing, I think he's more fascinating. Mm-hmm. When you start to see that, that's what I think starts to displace the bad stuff. It's kind of like, wait a minute. This will beat me silly. He will love me fully. I don't know. Gee, let me weigh those two. When I understand that it's not a performance thing, that's when I think I can start drawing that in a way that starts to change me. If it's a performance thing, I'll only take as much as I deserve.
Yeah.
And the problem is, I don't really deserve.
I don't feel like I deserve anything. Exactly.
See, but I don't know. I don't know where we get conditioned with that. But in the dynamic of love, most of us do have an absolute performance indicator that we restrict the love that we will allow others to show us. If I don't feel like somehow I'm worthy, I mean, if you stop and ask someone about that, they're not going to confess that. They're not going, well, I really thought this through. So, but there's a dynamic in us that when we're wired on performance, we don't really like it when someone loves us fully. We feel indebted.
Yep.
And that's not comfortable.
Right.
I would sooner be in the power position where I've done more.
Well, and I think we also, from inside out, we're doing that to other people. The people we don't like or bother us, or we dismissive of them. We kind of love people that are worthy to receive our love. So we do it both sides, don't we?
Yeah, I think we do.
So that's why we interpret it internally. Not only is that people, we feel like people are doing that to us, because we're in fact doing that to other people. And so that love, even what we talk about as love, is this quid pro quo. You be good to me, I'll be good to you. As long as we're in it together, we're good and we're loving. And then, oh, once you tick me off, that's it. You're not worthy anymore. And people live, I think society and then religion so dovetails into that performance thing. You're loved, you're worthy when you perform well. And when you don't, and I think some of us are comfortable loving that way. I will love you when you perform well, when you meet the needs of my heart, then I'll feel tender, kind, and gracious towards you. But I won't crawl into your being obnoxious to me or brutal to me or painful to me and don't know how to crawl into that and love you anyway, which I think, again, is a story of the incarnation. Loved us anyway. I'm going to find you in there and love you out of it. And I want to show you that the greatest act of loving is not getting something from somebody. It's laying your life down for that which you love.
But when you experience the passion that's behind anyway, where it's like, it's not like, well, okay, you know, I'm God, so I got to. But there's a sense of, you know what? I absolutely love you. And in spite of whatever you're doing to push me away, I'm not leaving. I think when the human heart gets in touch with that, oh boy, talk about the power to transform. I have a friend in my life that, I'll be honest, at first exchange, this is not someone I would be drawn to. Okay? They're sandpaper.
Okay? Yeah.
All the idiosyncrasies are the things that I'm going like, nah, nope. I'm not like that. I don't like that. That's the one thing I wish they'd change. And I really don't understand, other than I think Jesus is doing a really fun educational process for me in this. For whatever reason, that hasn't grated me. And I have almost made it a bit of my own personal challenge to say, you know what? I'm just going to look past that, and I'm going to love this person because I know there's something of wonderful value in there. I wonder if the power of acceptance will allow that to come forth and transform, because trying to chide them on some of their behaviors is not going to work, okay? It's only going to make them feel uncomfortable. And so it's been just the sense of, what will the power of acceptance do? And I got to tell you, I have absolutely so enjoyed just watching that transform somebody.
Hmm.
Where I'm just going like, okay, this has to be something supernatural, because I know Brad. Brad's not really like this.
Yeah.
And I'm just getting infatuated with the sense of, wow, Lord, you love me like this. As much as I think I'm doing this magnanimous thing towards another person of, you know, well, I'm just, you know, I'm loving this. And you're just going like, no, Lord, I think this is how you passionately pursue me. And it is. It's what changes me. When I realize that even at my worst, you're still well pleased and impassioned with your love towards me, gosh, that conquers a thousand things.
It does. And that's why I hope people get a sense of that, particularly those people that feel like, you know, we started this with those people that feel like they're looking in from the outside and wishing they could. And I think what we talked about, the idea of you being real with you, you're getting in touch with God's love that goes beyond your performance. You finding your way into that reality and letting him make it real to you. That's where the dynamic of living love makes sense.
I wonder if there isn't an intentional dynamic of that moment of what feels like isolation. I wonder if that's where God doesn't try to go one-on-one with us, if we'd let him, if we wouldn't hide in that moment. Because that is so painful. When you feel all by yourself in the midst of this crowd and stuff is going on and you're just feeling like, man, I am on the outside of everything. I'm pretty sure that's a universal emotion that humans feel.
Yep.
I don't know anyone that hasn't encountered that before. And that is really frightening, and that's really painful. But my experience has been, those have been some of the most transformative moments when I've found God, or probably more accurately said, when he's found me and I've become aware.
That's where you got to have a sense. I think most people get into that sense of isolated, not doing well, performing poorly. And there is no hope that God shows up here. I've got to somehow crawl out of this pit, find my way back to God. And I think that's how most people unbiasedly go at it. If people really got the message, God shows up here. So at your most broken, isolated, whatever, look for him. Just look. Just open your eyes. God, show me where you are. And not think this pit has made you abhorrent to God, but think of this pit as making you endeared to God. You know, I'm helping someone right now going through a very dark place in their life. And what I said to them is, as they're going through this, don't think that this is the place that excludes you from God's life. It's not. This is the place where God wants to show up. This is the place where God makes himself known. This is where God wants to find us. Not after we've cleaned up everything and then found our way back to some semblance of sanity. And then, you know, we're going to earn God's presence again is kind of the underlying lie about that, I think. I'm going to earn my way back. Well, why do you want to earn your way back when God's not asking for it? When God, You know, the prodigal kid again comes home. There's no earning his way back to anything. It's just Father's love's right there. It's always been there. And you're the one that's lived outside of it, not because it wasn't there. It's just because you were so overwhelmed by your own pain, you couldn't see it. And if any of us had a 6-year-old child, like the, you know, 6-year-old child's diagnosed with cancer, there's no blame for that. There's no, well, stupid kid, what are they doing? It's just all endearment and I'm going to crawl. We're going to fight this thing. I'm going to be in this with you. That's God's heart about our sin. I'm convinced it is. God doesn't look at us like, oh yeah, you're a stupid sinner. Look at the problems you have and look at the whole self-image issues and blah, blah, blah. God's just saying, oh my gosh, my child, you lost. I love you. I want to find you. I want to walk you out of this place. And if we could just be open in moments like that, that maybe God makes himself known here, not that I need to get to a higher place of something. I mean, I was recently in one of those quote unquote worship events where, I mean, you're literally being bodily dragged up the mountain and, you know, thrown
sweet.
In.
Sweet. Oh, they're taking you there.
Oh, it's it. And I tell you, you know, we got to come there without any disappointment, without any sin, without, I'm just going, you're loading stuff on this room full of people. Don't have a clue that you're not endearing them to the God you know or enticing them into that relationship. You're actually shoving them out of the place that God has for them. But boy, it happens repeatedly.
I imagine God's kind of like, hey, hold up. Slow down there, little fella. I'm sure he's going, no, wait a minute. No, that's not true. I mean,
this is not helpful. You know, to me.
I think it's weird. I think the season that I'm in is I've just bumped across a bunch of these guys that are a little more of the, you know, God's a little bit angry at you crowd. You know, they got the truth and they're going to clean us all up. And you know, they're going to let us know the judgment, and you end up going like, you know what? I know enough theology and enough verses to go, I'm tracking. I can see that. But you end up going like, and the reason that's not true is because it's just words and you're not matching the heart with which they're being said. I mean, I think Satan knows all the judgment stuff. I think he knows all the law. I think he can beat us silly with it.
Yeah. And enjoys it.
Yeah. And I think he can mimic the voice of God really good for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Until they actually, and I almost want to say, until they actually know him in those moments, because you're just going like, wait a minute. Yes, that's true. Yes, those words are correct. But that's not how he says them.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so hard in those moments to have a conversation with someone who is like, you know what? They have been trained on the letter, but they have not imbibed the spirit that would say it, saying, no, the word is correct. Yes, I agree. That verse is there. Yes. And I'm not explaining it away and I'm not jumping over it or around it. It's just, it's said with a life that is so profoundly for us. It doesn't say it like you did. And it just, I find those moments going like, gosh, Lord, this is a sincere brother who absolutely is longing to do what's right. I don't think he's waking up going, I would like to be an angry, arrogant jerk. I mean, I don't think that's going on. But you're just going like, how do I help love them to a place of hearing those same words from such a profoundly different place? And it's been so wild to just go like, you know what? You got to hear first. He is pleased. He digs human beings. He's absolutely head over heels in love with human beings, as messed up as we are.
Yeah.
And I think when you know that, it's just hard to then lambast people, because you're just going like, nope, he doesn't do that.
Yeah, but for those for whom that sounds all Russian, and I don't get that, and I don't see that part of the room, and I'm feeling left out of that thing, it's a very, it can be painful,
yeah,
isolating.
That,
but hopefully there'll be some hope in your heart to just stop a minute and go, could I be missing the heart of this thing? Could I be really putting this bent to God. What I love about John Beaumont, one part of my discussion with him, he says, you know you've heard someone spoken the words of God to you when they warm your heart. I'm like, well, that's really good.
Yeah.
Things that warm your heart, because yeah. God is endearing and is inviting us into a relationship at that level. When you're feeling beat with a stick, you probably are. So when it doesn't warm your heart, chuck it. Just say, I'm not buying it. I'm not going to let somebody else beat me over the head with my need for God. I want to be won by the love of the Father into a relationship with Him because He's enduring. And I've taken that to heart. There's a lot of things I hear at times going, yep, nothing about that warms my heart. Nothing about that invites me in. That's why I was sitting in one of these worship deals going, nope, there's nothing here warming my heart. So I'm going to find what is warming my heart, and I'm going to spend some time with Jesus in spite of the fact of what the rest of the room is doing at the moment. And I can still engage Him in that way and want to and will. And when things don't do that, when they feel like we're getting beat up with it, even truth, even like you say, the words are true, but truth in God doesn't beat you up. It invites you in.
Yeah, truth has a heart, not just words.
Yep.
And I think the more that you come to know Him, the more that you're listening for that same ring. It's like, it's not about the words. That could be Russian. I want to hear the echo of the heart behind that. Because one is life-giving, and the other shuts people down. Can be the exact same words.
Yeah. And so if you're feeling shut down, if that's the way it feels, isolated, alone, shut down, God's angry, dissatisfied, upset at me, whatever, now you got to realize I'm listening to the wrong voices. I think that begins to mark some change. Maybe I'm listening to the wrong voices in my life. Maybe there's something else I can see here. And God, help me rest into that reality. Help me find that in a way that's alive.
Yeah, and it's not just listening for the things that make me happy.
Nope. Nope.
It's just, I think real freedom and real love is incredibly transformative, and it doesn't cause me to need to hide from the truth.
Yeah.
I can accept me unfinished as I am when I know that I'm loved and He's promised not to leave me alone.
Yeah. And I think one other thing that adds to that is that God is very comfortable in the process that transforms us. That's when I can get comfortable. If I think the goal
doesn't seem to be in a hurry, does he?
Oh, yeah, that be holy even as I'm holy. And then who can't damn themselves for that verse anytime you want to? But when God's, when there's this process that God's undergoing to grow our faith in Him, to transform us, to help us learn to live in the dynamics of love instead of fear and all the other things that bind us, when we really get comfortable in the process ourselves, that's where we get, and we've talked a lot about, just you can live in the moment. And yeah, I see things wrong with me today. Sure I do. Do I like them? No. Do I justify them? No. But neither do I live under the illusion that I of myself can fix them. And so I just let those things invite me.
We'll get there.
More closely to Him. Yeah. And if you don't enjoy the process, and I look at people in my life around that go through bits of process and think, wow, why is God dealing with this now? I would have dealt with this 20 years ago if I were God. But it's obvious that God's loving them, inviting them into other freedoms, has now created the space where God can take them through something very, very deep and open even a door of greater freedom on their heart, going, yeah, I would have done this 20 years ago. But God knew it was doable now. 20 years ago, it would have been overwhelming. 20 years ago, the life of love and the what brings all around that, the support system, isn't there. And so it's going to take you under. And God has a real sense of process. And we have only a focus on the product. I want to be right. I want to be holy. I want to get this. I want to get that. And man, I love when people can relax into the process and just say, you know what? I am where I'm at today. And I love Him, and I want Him to keep taking me on, and I'm in a process with Him. And therefore, when I see stuff in my life that's not all together, yeah, do I repent and mourn that a little bit? I do. Do I go absolutely nuts trying to fix it on my own? I'm sorry. I don't go there. I go back to Him and say, God, you understand this. I want you to change this too. I want you to get to this in my life. And He does.
Yes. I'm glad I'm not God.
There's a lot of people probably glad you're not God.
I know that. I think that's absolutely, universally, I think we can sign up and the planet is glad Brad is not God. I just, the freedom in knowing that and being able to trust him. I mean, it's like you drive through Malibu Canyon. It's one of the windiest. I mean, it's beautiful.
Just did it the other day.
But it is incredibly windy. It is more fun to be in the driver's seat than it is the passenger seat going through there, especially if you're going fast.
Why is that? You got control issues, Bradley?
No, but I'm thinking so much of life is like that, where we would prefer to be in the in control position. And I'm sitting there going like, you know what? I think Jesus is doing a wonderful freeing job for me, because I recognize I am so glad I am not the one driving. I am so glad I am not the one completely in control, because I'm pretty aware of I don't see it all, I don't know it all, and I have no idea what to do. And I'm glad that I do have someone I can turn to that does.
Yeah,
that is so freeing.
Yeah.
And you just end up going like, I'm sure there's areas in my life where I am a total control freak, maybe. But I'm going like, I'm not really seeing that as a benefit.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of going like, nah, I don't think I'm going to be that way, because I don't think that works out very well.
And one thing that helps me, honestly, when I get in a situation that I know I didn't start, didn't initiate, didn't invite myself into, and things unfold that God's doing, particularly when they're difficult things and they're challenging to me, it's a real relief to step back and say, well, I didn't choose this. This is not my scheme. I didn't volunteer for this, other than I've just followed him here. And so this is what's next, and this is what he wants to do. Great, I'm in. And I trust that, because I didn't choose to find myself there, that God has brought things to bear, and God is bringing things to surface that he wants to bring to surface at this point, because it's a real part of his healing and wholeness. And that's all good.
On the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,